Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by nobody. I am going to quickly go over today's game, or yesterday's game by the time you guys are listening to this. Lakers beat Orlando 96-87 in a game that happened. That's about as well as I could summarize that game. It was a weird one. Lakers jump out to a real big lead. I think it was like 24, 25 points. Orlando comes all the way back. And it wasn't even like Orlando was playing that well. And it was just the Lakers were just incredibly lazy after they built that lead. And shit happens, I guess. So I'll quickly go over the game, some of the notes I made over the course of it. And then I'm going to turn to the iTunes mailbag to get caught up so that Pete and I can have some actual basketball conversations tomorrow on topics that we want to come up with. So we'll see how all these things go. As you guys can hear, I'm still getting over this cold. I bit my tongue also, so it sounds like I have an incredible lisp. That's got to sound great in your guys' cars. Let's just get through this one, all right? All right, so let's start with, I thought the best player on the court tonight was LeBron, as is, you know, his usual custom. 25 points, 11 assists, or no, 10 assists, 11 rebounds, 11 of 24 from the field, 106 from three-point range. And yet, I'm not going to call those stats empty. I would never go that far. Triple-double's a triple-double, and the Lakers won. So it by definition, when your team wins and you get good stats, those aren't empty stats. But I feel like one of the things that we have talked about quite a bit throughout the season and since LeBron came to LA has been that the Lakers seem to take their drive and their energy, like they're going to build off of LeBron's energy to a large extent. And I felt like even while he had a great, you know, a great statistical game, he just was kind of going through the motions, especially after they built that big lead. I thought he and everybody came out with incredible energy and built that really big lead and then just kind of coasted. And, you know, some nights you can get away with that. Orlando is not a very good team, and they're banged up as well. They were playing without Markelle Fultz, who wasn't out there, and then Nikola Vucevic is still hurt, so they're still kind of trying to figure things out over the course of the season. But I don't know. It leaves a gross taste in your mouth, and I say that as somebody who just had some cough medicine, which never leaves a very good taste in your mouth. I want to talk about Jared Dudley. He is not somebody who usually comes up on this show because he is not somebody who usually plays, but he steps in today in Kyle Kuzma's absence, drops 9 points, 3 of 5 from the field, all three of those field goals coming from behind the line. And even his fourth one looked like it was online. Even Stu said that as it was happening. A really good game for him. And then on top of everything, when Dwight Howard got into a bit of a tussle because all of Orlando's arms, he got kind of tangled up in there. And the first person there to let everybody know that they aren't going to mess around with his teammate was Dudley. And on one hand, the kind of stickler in me says, hey, man, it was still a close game. Please don't get thrown out of a close game while you are one of the few Lakers hitting shots consistently. But on the other hand, he had said heading into the year that that's kind of the role he's going to play, that if he's on the court and somebody is trying to get away with stuff with a teammate of his that he doesn't like, he's going to let it be known that he doesn't like it. And he stood up for Dwight there. And, you know, even while they lost probably the guy who was shooting the ball the best for them on the night, in that moment, I felt like the team kind of woke up and then took care of business the rest of the way in that fourth quarter. So that was cool to see. Good all-around game there from Dudley. Avery Bradley made his return and looked like somebody who has missed significant time. He never really got into much of a rhythm out there. He finishes the game with only 2 points, 1 of 4 from the field. But we're kind of seeing this again where So look at the starters here. Anthony Davis, plus 4. LeBron, plus 8. McGee, minus 3. Danny Green, minus 8. 0 of 6 from 3-point range for Green. One of those games for him. KCP, minus 3. And then you look at the bench. Jared Dudley, plus 16. Avery Bradley, plus 12. Alex Caruso, plus 13. Even Troy Daniels, in very few minutes, very short minutes, plus 8. So the Lakers bench, you know, Anthony Davis said the other day that he doesn't think they're getting enough credit. And, you know, to the bench's credit, they are going in there and kind of lifting the energy of the game when you see the starters just kind of messing around, especially at the beginning of the third quarter, right? They came in there and just kind of fucked around for a bit, and it really kind of threw off the way the game was supposed to go. And, you know, it's good that the bench was able to step in there and take care of business. It would be nice, though, if a starting unit with LeBron James and Anthony Davis could, especially in the third quarter, come out and punch a team in the mouth when they already built that lead. Why not just build that lead again? And that's kind of, this is where the way that the game goes is kind of a bummer. You know, the Lakers jump out to that 25-ish point lead. You would think that LeBron would be able to get away with not playing as many minutes. Well, Davis plays 37, LeBron plays 38. And getting ready for a long road trip, this is a game that would have been nice to get some rest for those guys, and that's not how it played out. So a win is a win, and, you know, Anthony Davis said it after the game that not all of their wins are going to be pretty. The Lakers are still off to their best start in my lifetime. They are 22-3. They haven't started that well since the 85-86 season. So kudos to them for this start. You win however you have to win on any given night, but feels like a bit of a missed opportunity here to get some important guys some important rest at the beginning of this road trip. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to start answering your questions. All right, the first question here comes from Paul Thrilla. Hey guys, a lot was made in the offseason of AD wanting to play power forward, not center. And if AD did have a weakness, it was him getting bodied by bigger centers around the league. What do you guys think has led to his success against Jokic and Gobert on this road trip? Thanks for your time. So I think one of the things that, you know, a lot of people said when there was a lot made about him, Anthony Davis, not wanting to play power forward or wanting to play power forward and not center, was that, well, look, he has made those gripes before and then still went out and played power forward or still went out and played center. That has not really been the case this year. He has played the most minutes at power forward than he has really at any point in his career, maybe since his rookie season. And, you know, even with that said, Lakers lineups with him at center haven't looked that great. Now, a lot of the Lakers lineups when he is playing center don't always feature LeBron at power forward. So I think the lineups when you have Anthony Davis at center and then LeBron James at power forward, those are still going to be the Lakers' best lineups, and those are going to tend to be the lineups that they tend to close with. To answer the second question, the reason why he was able to succeed against Jokic and Gobert was that the Lakers have done a really good job of trying to get him the ball on the move. What you can't do if you're going up against guys that big is allow them to play stationary and allow them to get set their base and be physical with you. Jokic is in kind of a weird spot too, though, because he's been kind of moping throughout this year. He's picked it up a little bit of late, but he's kind of moped, and he moped throughout that game against the Lakers when the Lakers were in Denver. But yeah, I think to answer the actual question here, the reason he, meaning Anthony Davis, had success against both those guys is the Lakers put those guys in pick and rolls, and Anthony Davis was able to attack the defense with a bit of a head of steam, whereas, you know, when earlier in the year, if he would have played against those guys, they would have kind of tried to post up and gone to straight post-up situations, and I don't think that would have worked out very well. All right, Trojan Jake writes, "Hey guys, fantastic work at all, as always. Thank you. How do you guys feel about our big's defensive potential against Montrezl Harrell? I was watching the Clips play the Blazers the other day, and he had his way offensively with Portland's interior guys, but it's hard to imagine he'll be as effective against our guys, right?" Well, Portland employs Hassan Whiteside, and when you look at Hassan Whiteside, you think, that guy should be a really good NBA big. But he has the motor of a tranquilized hippo. It's not great. It's not very good. And yeah, when Harrell goes up against a guy like that, where Harrell has one of the best motors in the game, he's going to just run circles around Whiteside and have his way, as you say. But against the Lakers, you know, Dwight has a pretty good motor. Anthony Davis has an incredible motor. JaVale McGee, in the minutes that he's out there, can definitely move. And the Lakers have enough length to give Harrell problems. So I think if it was just a straight matchup like that, I'm not really particularly worried about Harrell. But those things don't always happen in vacuums. You have, you know, over the course of the game, you have Davis, you know, trying to help out because Kawhi Leonard is picking apart his matchup, and that allows for Harrell to get into the cracks, and that's where Harrell starts to give you problems. So if it's just a straight matchup, I'm not all that worried. It's when the Lakers' bigs have to rotate over to help elsewhere, that's where Harrell makes me a little nervous, and that's where, frankly, he probably will get quite a bit of opportunity to give the Lakers some problems. So the question here comes from somebody with a bunch of emojis. What's good, Anthony and Pete? Still loving the pod. I did figure out how to change my name from a bunch of emojis. Just haven't had a chance, so my bad. One, Dwight now with 2 3 attempts in back-to-back games against Denver and Utah. Do you think it's because it's two games we were going to end up winning and they were just garbage time threes, or do you think he's getting that kind of confidence we don't want him to have, because he also had a mid-range bank shot in the Utah game? Two, what's demanding the ball in the paint, and what does that look like to play into his role? Look, they were garbage time threes. I wouldn't make too big a deal out of it. With all the legal matters with Cousins cleared up, if he's ready while we're in a deep playoff run, does a 70% conditioned Cousins make our team better or worse? What's the best lineup you could see him with? I don't think, we need to give up on the Cousins helping the Lakers narrative this year. It's not going to happen. Three, is it safe to say that Lethal Shooter has really helped out KCP, Rondo, Kuz with their three-pointers, because Kuz, besides Kuz thinking too much on possessions, it seems like their three-point shots are better, and it also seems like Rondo can't miss. Is this something you can accept to outweigh him being a liability on defense? Pete and I talked about this last game, and look, so long as Rondo is shooting, like, he's not going to shoot 50% from three-point on the year. But, you know, Pete and I kind of decided on 42 to, like, 45% if he's in that range from three-point range. Then, yeah, it does outweigh his liability on defense, because he would make the Lakers' offense that much better. Regarding Lethal Shooter, KCP has either been incredibly hot or incredibly cold this year. And I kind of want to see, when we get to the end of the year, how much of each of those things he is. Does he have longer stretches of incredibly cold than he does incredibly hot? Kuz, I still think the verdict is out on Kuz, and probably will remain out on Kuz for quite some time. He missed last night's game against Orlando with a sprained ankle. I actually kind of think, you know, on top of just getting healthy in general, he's still probably recovering from the injury that kept him out, the stress fracture in his, or the stress reaction in his foot that kept him out to begin the year. Got poked in the eye a couple times, a couple other bumps and bruises over the course of the year. And him being out allows him to kind of see where he can attack. For example, Dudley steps in and was just wide open on three-pointers all over the court. And, you know, if Kuzma is watching that, maybe he can kind of pay attention to Dudley and figure out ways that Dudley was able to get himself wide open to extents that, that Kuzma hasn't been able to find that space himself. So just stuff like that. And you know, sometimes time away from the game allows you. So golf is kind of weird like this, where and anybody who has played golf will tell you, you play golf, maybe say you take like 2 or 3 months off of golf and you just kind of let your swing reset. You go back out there on the driving range and you just feel like you're hitting the ball incredibly pure. You know, maybe your putting isn't right where it should be. Maybe your short game isn't where it should be, because that stuff really helps with repetition. But your swing itself feels very natural, feels very pure. And then, you know, because you hit the ball really well there at the driving range that day, maybe you have a nice little stretch in a row where you go back, you know, 3-4 times, and then you start tweaking things, right? Then you start saying, well, should I mess with this grip here? And should I focus more on being inside out? Should I turn over a little bit more? Should I be a little bit more neutral in my weight throughout my stance? Like all these things, and you start getting in your own head, and then there it goes. There went that really nice, natural, pure swing that you got because you took a few months off. And then you have to take another, you know, maybe a month or so off, let that swing reset, get out of your own head, and go out there and play more natural golf. I kind of feel like that's what Kuzma could use here, is a nice little reset in terms of his approach to the game, where he can kind of step away, stop thinking about, you know, what reads and this and that and the other. Just take a step back, focus on, say, your three-point stroke, get that under control, and then come back and resume that kind of nice, pure golf swing. Let's take another quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to finish off your guys' questions. All right, By Magic writes, of course, covering the Lakers will be more popular, but your guest a couple shows ago needs to realize I probably wouldn't tune in if he was the main host on a Lakers podcast. You guys are great and appreciate your takes, but if you weren't good, I wouldn't listen. That simple. Appreciate it. My question is, why does your past guest hate the accountant so much? I guess that's Alex Caruso. There you go. And why does he choose sobriety, full needs, an MJ edible bat? I guess this is about Matt, and I'm almost positive he isn't sober. Last time we were in Vegas together, we threw a few back. So, look, again, I said this a couple shows ago regarding Matt. I enjoy how much work Matt puts into his basketball opinions. Maybe he puts too much work into them and he overthinks them, whatever. But I really respect Matt. He has been really good for the show. He has been really helpful to me personally. And I, even if we disagree on things, there's an amount of mutual respect there, and it makes for a fun conversation. And look, as somebody who is by far the least popular host or co-host here with Pete, it's kind of nice to bring somebody on that you like less than me. let's go with the next question here. Pineapples on pizza are awesome, writes. Although I'm against this at the time of the question, if the Lakers were to move on from Kuzma, what would you hope to get back for him? Like I said, I'm not for this as of now. I'm just trying to see his value. Kuzma's value is difficult to figure out here because, A, he's kind of an anomaly. Like he's very ambiguous in terms of what he actually is. His rookie season was great. Compared to expectations. He was a 27th overall pick, vastly outperformed that draft slot. His next year he comes in, he actually has expectations tied to him, and he falls well short of them. This year he comes in, has even higher expectations of him through, I'm not going to say no fault of his own, because he does the whole Kobe cosplay thing, but through mostly no fault of his own, expectations are frankly unrealistic. He has since fallen short, as you would expect, fallen well short of those expectations, and it's hard to really figure out what he is. He's also banged up right now. As I said a second ago, He hasn't been healthy yet this year. I said to Harrison the other day on the show, on Silver Screen and Rolls podcast, I asked Harrison if he thought that he has seen Kuzma with the same kind of lift that he was getting last year. And frankly, I'm not really seeing it. And I wasn't exactly shocked today to find out that, that Kuzma was taking a day off. We'll see how long he actually stays out with this thing. But, you know, I he hasn't really looked healthy. So in terms of trade value, now isn't the time to move him. For one thing, the Lakers are winning. And the other thing, too, is you don't want to sell a depreciated asset. And right now, his value is lower than it would be really at any other point in his career. So why try to move on from him now? I don't even know if it's worth the exercise of trying to evaluate what his return might actually be, given how low his stock currently is. Let's go with the next question here from Jason from New York City. Hey, Pete and Anthony, love the pod, always a daily listener. Don't worry, this is a super lighthearted question. Just curious, what moves would you make if you were the commissioner of the NBA, and I guess for this hypothetical, the players' union didn't exist? How would you ensure the growth of the game that the growth of the game continues? Would you add a few teams or take some away? Personally, I would. Never mind, I'll wait to hear from you. So, I'm going to bring this back up with Pete. I enjoyed this conversation. We've had this a couple times over the course of the running of this show. So I'll bring this back up to him. Right now, there's a big conversation about ratings regarding basketball or regarding the NBA that they're dropping. And I think some of it is beyond the NBA's control. The NBA's audience skews younger, and younger audiences are going to be more susceptible to cord cutting. So you're going to feel that in the ratings more with the NBA than you will the NFL or Major League Baseball. So I think you got some of that going on. I think another factor here, though, is that you have an entire conference that for more than a decade has been eons behind the West, right? The Eastern Conference has been a joke for a really long time. And while LeBron was playing out there, you kind of got away with it because whatever, LeBron's out there. And well, now that LeBron is in the West, you have important time slots out there in the East that are being filled by garbage teams. And then by the time the Western Conference game starts, usually around 7:30 in national game slots, well, by the time that game has started, everybody's tuned out because the Eastern Conference game was such garbage. So, and then the other thing, too, is that like on the East Coast, you have an audience, like by the time that game starts, a 7:30 game, that's 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. And, you know, it's kind of hard to get people to in front of the TV for that. You look at the NFL games and, you know, they start 10 o'clock a.m. our time, which means, or on West Coast time, which means, you know, they're at 1 o'clock on the East Coast. Everybody can tune in for that. Everybody can. The big Sunday night game usually is about 5 o'clock, 5:20, right? That's 8 o'clock, 8:20 on East Coast time. Everybody could tune in for that game. Monday night football, same kind of thing. 5 o'clock, everybody's tuning in at 8 o'clock Eastern time. Now the NFL is a bigger league. It's always been more popular than the NBA, but they make life easier on themselves. And you know, while it's harder for, you know, if a game was to start out here at 5:30 for a Laker game, well, just about nobody would be in the stands by the time that game started. So you got to kind of try to compromise here. But could you start it at like 6:30? Could you start it at 6? Like usually if a game is slated to start at say 7:30, it's not starting till like 7:40. So could you start a game at, could you schedule the game to start at 6? Have it start at like 6:15? That's like 9, that's 9:15. That at least gets there's a chance at people on the East Coast tuning in it for at least the start of that game, right? Just so, and that's just one possible solution. There's all kinds of other things. You have the lack of loyalty from superstars. So you have throughout the league, if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm watching Giannis right now. am I just counting down the days until he's actually gone, till he goes to the Warriors or the Lakers or the Knicks or the whatever? Is that something that the NBA can even legislate, right? Now, out here as Laker fans, we love the fact that we're just waiting for Giannis to come, right? It's great for us. It's fantastic for us. That's why ratings are up in LA, but they're kind of down everywhere else because, you know, Kawhi left Toronto. Paul George left Oklahoma City to come over here to LA. And now Clippers fans, all five of them, are really excited. But Anthony Davis leaves New Orleans. And, you know, if you're a New Orleans fan, you're getting ready to watch Zion. Is that a ticking time bomb? Are you just counting down the days, months, weeks, whatever, years until Zion is a Laker or a Clipper or a Knick or a Net, right? Like, how can the league actually do anything about this? Because, you know, if I was a team, if I for example, I'm a Vikings fan. I have been a Vikings fan for a long time. And there's a sense at the beginning of every season, yeah, I'm probably not going to win a championship this year. Probably not. In the back of my mind, I'm hoping for it, but I know, you know what? I'm probably never going to be able to see a Vikings championship over my lifetime. Is that okay for NFL fans? Vikings fans would say yes, and they will root for their team regardless. But in the NBA, in a much more predictable sport, is that okay? Are there fan bases out there? Do Orlando Magic fans, if you were to actually ask them straight up, do you think your team will ever win a championship in your lifetime? What is their answer going to be? They've lost multiple superstar centers to the Lakers. Is that good for the league? It's great for the Lakers, but is it good for the league? I don't know. I legitimately don't know. But if I was commissioner, I would start there with figuring out ways to, quote unquote, help continue to grow the league. Is how do we make it easier for people? Freaking League Pass is a freaking disaster. It's awful. It's a terrible product. That needs to be figured out. And if I was a commissioner, that's where I would start. But I'll bring that back up with Pete tomorrow. Sporadic writes, mailbag question. Let's say Boogie magically gets a Sensu bean and is suddenly as healthy as his body will allow him to be. How does that affect the current play of the team by adding a third slash fourth head at center? Kind of think you would have to let JaVale go. If Boogie came back and was just 100% healthy, I don't think there's enough minutes for all of those guys in the front court. Because, you know, you would say, well, just play Boogie alongside AD. Well, that means you're going to get fewer LeBron at the 4 minutes. And then what does that do for Kuzma's minutes, right? So I think if Boogie was just 100% healthy, as healthy as when he was signed, Lakers fans thought he was going to be to start the year, then I would just kind of let JaVale go. It'd be a bummer, but that's kind of how that goes. Let's go one more question here before my voice gives out completely. D-Gihas? The complete turnaround of this team makes it hard to believe that the entire Magic Johnson-Rob Pelinka fiasco was only 8 months ago. It is wild, right? What a long way that the Lakers have come in such a short amount of time. Like I said the other day, though, it would be nice if Magic was more involved with this rebuild than kind of the opposite of being involved with this rebuild, right? Like, he was the person charged with rebuilding it, and yes, he helped land LeBron James, and that was a very important first step. Though some would probably say, how much of a role did he play there? Was LeBron already coming regardless? Whatever. It's an interesting what if, but I do wish Magic was more involved here just because he's an icon, and it sucks to see Magic just kind of become a joke for the fan base as an executive. He's forever untouchable as a player, but as an executive, as now like a face around the Lakers, I'm not really sure he can show his face around the Lakers. in a Laker game or whatever. I'd be interested to see what the reception there would be. I think most Laker fans who are going to game are die hard enough to just give him an ovation regardless. And the Lakers are in such a good spot that, like, why muddy those waters with booing for Magic? But it's interesting nonetheless. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete will be back tomorrow. He and I will probably dive back into the mailbag. We'll figure out a couple things ourselves to talk about. I want to come back to that commissioner question. So plenty of fun stuff here today. Again, the Lakers win in Orlando. Ugly, albeit, but you know what? It's a road win, 12th straight road win, 22-3 on the year. Best start since 1985-1986 season. Can't really complain about that too much. So have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Talk to you tomorrow.